Hi, it's Elise.
Hey y'all, it's Kaylin.
And this is A Wild and Mindful Mess, Season 3, Episode 4.
You just held up three fingers.
No, no, it's four, but my hands are so small. You only saw three. It was four. Yeah, you didn't see my pink. Shut up. Hate you. Anyway. So what is this episode about?
Parenting different than your parents.
Okay. Well, why don't you start us off?
So the other day I was talking to my mom. I was talking to her about finally taking Lexapro. And I was like, I feel really bad that I waited this long, like, because now I feel so much better and I feel like I'm a better mom now and I'm a better wife. And I was like, I just feel like a really crappy mom for basically wasting the first 2 years that I had with Everly because I didn't want to get help. And she was like, are you kidding me? Because I could not think of a better mom than you. And I started thinking about it later that night and I was like, wow, like, you know, I hope that she felt proud when she told me that, like when she said that, you know, I couldn't think of a better mom than you. That implies that she thinks I'm a better mom than what she was. And like, she should feel proud of that because ultimately that is what I want for Everly. I want Everly to be better than me. Like, I want her to be better than me in every way. So for my mom to be able to say that you're the best mom, like that implying that I'm better than her, she should feel so proud. Like, she should feel so accomplished because that would be like everything to me for Everly to say that I feel like I reached that goal of being the best.
Okay.
I like it.
But she's totally different now than what my mom is totally different now than what she was. Like, I parent complete opposite than my mom, but she was never a bad mom. It just goes to show you like how we evolve as people and as parents. And if we don't evolve as a person individually, we're not going to evolve as parents and our kids will just ultimately be just like us. And that kind of sucks.
Do you know what really helps?
What?
Therapy.
And Lexapro.
And or for me, it's Zoloft.
This is not sponsored, by the way.
This is not. I wish it were because that would be a lot of money. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't see it. I only got on Zoloft after the split.
Mm-hmm.
And even it took a while. So we split the end of May and I didn't get on Zoloft until December. So it was June, July, August, October, November. Yeah. About 6 months probably of me just going down this terrible anxious hole and snapping more than usual, crying more than usual. I didn't even want to be around Felicity. Sometimes I was just like, oh my God, just leave me alone. I just need quiet. I need space. And then I blew up at Thanksgiving last year, over something that was kind of petty, but it also tied into being lied to. And that's the next day I called up the doctor and I was like, I need help. I am very anxious. I told her, I was like, none of my coping skills are working anymore. It's gotten out of control. And I told her what's been going on in my life. And that was before even my mom was diagnosed with brain cancer. And she's like, okay. Then she just gave me this test. And this is all over Zoom. And she gave me a test and I scored like 19 out of 21 for anxiety. And then I scored, I don't remember what my depression score was, but it wasn't super high. I knew it was more anxiety than depression that I was feeling. And then we started on Zoloft and at first I felt worse and I was like, oh my gosh. And I have a friend who also has taken it and I had texted her. I'm like, oh, I feel so terrible right now. And she said, I promise you it gets better. Just stick it out. So 2 weeks on the dot, 2 weeks. That morning I woke up and I felt like myself again for the first time in a long time.
It's weird, huh?
Yeah. It's like, it's so hard to explain. It's not like all of a sudden this medication cloud comes on you and you're like, oh, I'm just high off my medicine. It doesn't feel like that. It just, you wake up and you're like,
it feels good today.
Yeah. I feel like myself.
Yeah. I explained it as I wasn't dreading starting my day. Yeah. And Marcus noticed that I looked happy is what he said. Mm-hmm. He said that I looked like I used to look, which I felt so much better too. Like I did. I feel way better.
Yeah.
But I feel guilty because I knew that I wasn't okay. I knew I was unwell and I waited way too long. Our therapist, he was like, Kaylin, how do you feel? And I said, I just feel unwell. I was crying. It's ridiculous. I'm so ridiculous. Oh my God. I cannot. So do you feel like the difference in you being a mom versus your mom being a mom is that you took control? Like, stop it.
I'm gonna
re-ask my question.
Okay.
So do you feel like the difference is that you took control in motherhood and your mom did not? Like, to me hearing it, that's how it seems. It's like you took control of it. You took accountability. You're like, I'm going to get my shit together because I have to. Because it was just you.
I don't know.
How much do you pay Iris? Because I'll take that.
No, I really don't know how to answer that. I don't know. So I guess I've always kind of talked a little bit about it or hinted at my childhood somewhat. So my childhood was really traumatic. My biological dad was a drug abuser and an alcoholic, and he would abuse my mom when he was drunk, very, very, very badly. One time my sister and I were in the room in bunk beds, and he came and he grabbed the 2x4 that was held up the top of the bunk bed, and he like hit her with it. And I was like, I don't know, 6, I think. And so then we didn't have a phone then because we were very, very poor. And so I opened the window and I was screaming for someone to call 911. It was an apartment complex. And so she had left him finally. And then she married the next guy who was like emotionally abusive. He was straight up a psycho. He was very scary to me. And, I woke up one night to him touching me. And I told my mom, and my mom said something to him. I don't know, if anything else happened, I blocked it out. And I don't need to go to therapy to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And then we left him in the middle of the day to go live with another guy. And then he found us, the second husband found us and started talking to my mom again and trying to plead with her to come back. And then I had walked in and I was telling my mom silently, like, no, 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 we cannot go back. It was terrible there. And she told him Elise doesn't want to go back. And then I guess he said, like, give the phone to her. And I was 9 at the time. And so then he tried to talk me into coming, you know, try to manipulate me, but I was just like, no, I don't want to come. But we ended up going back anyway. And so we moved from that guy's house back to the first husband's house. And then she had a little bit of a hospital stay. And it was good for her. So then she came back, and then we left in the middle of the day again to go move back with that guy, the third guy that would become her third husband. Wow. And then then we had to go and stay with my bio dad because the second husband was stalking us. And so we stayed with my dad. So anyway, she she divorced him, the second husband, and married the third husband. And at first he seemed okay, you know, and then he wasn't okay. And then he would then beat the shit out of me for about 10 years. And I mean, seriously beat, like, you know, punch me, kick me, push me, drag me, for that long. And then eventually, my mom found holes in our room. So where he could watch us as we're dressing. And then, he would like mess with our underwear and stuff. And then he would, be naked when we would come out of our bedroom doors. And, he would try to trick us, like he had left, and then we would come out and then he would be naked. And so we would tell my mom, I would tell my mom, and ultimately what would happen is, well, when she found the holes, he just cried and said he was hanging something up, but the holes were directly in the paneling.
All the way through the fucking sheetrock.
No, they were paneling.
Oh, okay.
But it was right in the brown lines where you couldn't see it, yeah. You know? And so they were so perfectly, you know, whatever. So, she believed him, whatever. So he would cry or he would get mad. Then ultimately what would happen is I would get in trouble for opening my mouth and then I would get kicked out of the house. So this went on for a lot of years. So if it wasn't like sexual abuse, it was physical abuse.
Right.
And it was all because my mom was very scared and codependent. And, yeah, I think that's the first time I ever talked about all of that to anyone other than really close friends of mine. So my relationship with my mom has always been a little, there's been a little bit of tension. I've gone to therapy. What?
Stop laughing.
Why? What?
So it freaks me out when you laugh. Like it, like heavy, because this is like heavy and you're just like, and I'm like, stop. Oh my God. I'm about
what
to
you want me to do? Cry?
Well, I'm about to cry, but
I
like,
have I mean, cried enough.
Your nervous laugh.
Well, it's very, you know, I think when you are a victim of any kind of abuse, let alone multiple different kinds of abuse, you feel ashamed talking about it, you know,
Which is really, really,
it's fucked that up.
It just goes to show you the lack of accountability.
Yeah.
Because if there were any accountability, shame would be the last thing that you feel as a victim. Like it's just,
Yes. So my therapist had me write a letter to my stepdad, to put the shame back on him because that's where the shame should be.
Did it help?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not crying right now, you know, before, if I tell the story, I would cry. And I realized with her help is that all of that damage had been done to just my physical body, but it didn't change my spirit and who I am. And that really helped me and it helped me forgive my mom and feel sad for my mom for just being too fucking scared. You know, but it also probably explains my terrible choices in men.
It does. I don't know anyone who has been through what you've been through. But I know people who have been through some really shitty relationships, but not to your degree at all. But it's always reflective, but I feel like with you, it has been so like reflective, very much like where I would be like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I remember now.
Yeah.
I remember what we're doing. And it's like, because that was your life. Like that was your entire life.
What? Like my childhood?
Yeah. Like that is crazy how that's really what you thought relationships were like. Like that is what you thought a family was like. Like you knew it was supposed to be better, but if it were like a little less dysfunctional than this, it's okay. As long as there's an improvement, we're doing all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my mom was, and my mom, she was brought up with parents who were emotionally unavailable and pretty cold, especially like physically. And my mom was like that too with us. And so I guess in it, with all that being said, myself as a parent is now, sometimes I feel like I have to check myself because I think I'm overcompensating for the job my mom did. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you, so you've evolved and you're trying to be a good mom, but also feel that void that you have for a mom.
I definitely have a void for a mom. And please let me say this. Like, again, I love my mom. I love my mom. I'm sad that she's dying. I wish things had gone differently. I wish our relationship was different. You know, it is what it is. I have forgiven her. You know, so let me just say that, but I overcompensate in my need to protect and do for Felicity. So like this
which
whole
getting, isn't bad, like, but it, that's not the bad part. The bad part, the only bad part, cause you're like the best mom that I know by far, like hands down. I could tell that you've been through some shit with your mom because of how good of a mom you are. Like I assumed that that was the situation, but, the guilt that comes with feeling like you're not doing enough is the bad part. I don't think that it's like what you do for Felicity, like over, I don't think that that's what's bad. I don't think that you're like the showers of love and like reminding her every day that you're excited that she woke up, that you get to see her and that you love taking her to school and you can't wait to pick her up. Like, I don't think that that's what's harmful. It's the guilt of, let's say that you have to hire someone to pick her up from school because you're going to be working. The guilt that comes with not being able to say, I'm so excited to pick you up from school today. Like just little things like that, or this job situation, the guilt, the fear, because it's, you feel like you let Felicity down.
Yeah. That's the hardest part, was me continuously feeling like I was letting Felicity down. Like, you know, and I wasn't, you know, just like my therapist said, you know, are you applying for jobs? Are you interviewing? Are you doing everything you can? How are you letting her down? But, I will say that when, Scott and I split, and I didn't have a job at that point. No, I was in between, because I had worked part-time here and there, but, I didn't have a job right then. And I immediately thought like, oh my God, my mom.
Really?
Yes. Because when
you felt out of control,
when he left, I had nothing. And then I was just like, oh my God, oh my God, what do? I don't want to be my mother where I'm like trying to make it work, because of money or whatever, or to, I was very scared of, and that is also why I am the person I am today, is because I didn't want her life. So I went to college. My sister went to college. We became independent women, and me trusting Scott, made me feel really stupid because I never wanted to be that way. And it felt like I was that way that day.
Mm-hmm. I think so. That's how any betrayal, like how I feel, you know, how I say like everything for me comes down to honesty and loyalty, because they're the same things to me. Like I love honesty so much that the things that I allow in my life have to be honest, because that's where I find security, is in that honesty. And with you, I wonder if it's like that love for stability or that love for security, maybe, probably, like a controlled environment. Like, I mean, you love that feeling. And that's where you feel most secure. So it feels like the ultimate betrayal when that's gone.
Yeah. I mean, I had trusted someone to let go of making my own money, because I was the one that was supporting us.
Right. And now you rely.
Yeah. Now, and then it was, the rug was torn out from under me and I was so pissed at myself. Yeah, I was pissed at myself. And then the anxiety and pressure I felt to not take away my daughter's home and her school and everything that she knew, because things had already changed with her family. And like to do that to her as well was just, I had gone through, I can't tell you how many times we moved when we were kids, when I was a kid, just because of all of the toxicity and abuse. And I don't know. I will never do that again, though. That is something I will tell you, no matter how much therapy that I'll go through, and I'm still in therapy. I will never trust someone again to give up my sense of self in my money making ever.
Yeah. I feel like every person has to learn that the hard way, whether it's to that degree or not. Like, I feel like for me, my situation doesn't have to be like that for me to feel betrayed. Like it can be something small, like a small displacement of trust, and I feel like the ultimate betrayal. So I don't know, like for me, it could be, I could learn that lesson on a much smaller, less devastating scale, I think, and still let that be my takeaway because I'm dramatic.
Well, you are dramatic. Yes. You would take something very small and just be like, betrayal done. And I'm all like, no, I will. Yeah. Yeah. That was on a very, very big scale. And, you know, I was just mad at myself. So I will never do that again. As long as I live, I don't care if I find the love of my fucking life. I will always support myself and my daughter. Always. I will never be in this position again because this position sucks. And you know that, because how many countless times have I cried saying, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do.
It's been rough, guys.
Yeah. Very, very, but that's because I also am overcompensating.
Right. Cause you feel guilty.
Yeah. Because I don't want to let her down, because I was let down so much when I was a kid. I just want to give her that stable, loving, nurturing home that I never had.
Right.
You know,
so doing that, basically being the opposite mom.
Yes. Yes.
And see, it's crazy. Cause like for you, when I think of your situation, it's so like, it goes from being completely toxic and horrible to this like beautiful, loving family. Whereas mine, I just feel like my parents were very strict. They were very religious, but they weren't bad parents. Like the things that I feel like were really messed up came from my religion. Like the shame that I felt as a child, like I couldn't talk to my mom about sex because sex was shameful. Like I couldn't talk to my mom about anything really, because it's like shameful things, and like being out in the world and secular and going to hell and like trying to meet this constant expectation of doing things the right way. So it's full of shame. And I just, now as a parent, me as a child, I felt so guilty and so full of shame constantly that I just really wonder how my parents felt raising us in under those circumstances. And I feel like now I have a lot of grace for those things, but back then it was rough. But my mom's a dope soul these days. Like, she's fun. I wish that she could have been like that back then. But I guess that it's like the growth that happened over time, because she had to face some really, my parents went through some shit raising us. It wasn't because of me, y'all. It wasn't because of me. I was not the one. But I mean, really bad times that I feel like has really changed who they are as parents for the better. But they had to go through shit in order to get to that, you know, like it wasn't easy at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just glad that my parents were always like, just move away.
Yeah.
Yes. God, yes. Like, our town is really small, and everyone there, is, like, especially during the election, it just showed, like, how if you don't change your surroundings, your perspective doesn't change either. And the stuff that people were saying, it sounded just like some of their parents. Like, I mean, it was really, like, they raised their kids to be just like them.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Like, I would like Felicity to be a better version than me.
Exactly. Like, that is like my, that's why when my mom said that, it like hit me later that day. And I was like, dang, like, I hope she felt good when she said that, because it's, that's my goal for Everly to be better than me. I want her to make a difference, like, or I want her to know that she can make a difference.
I did. I finally got a job, and I can, you know, Felicity can rely on me to make sure she has
her
home.
She could rely on you before. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel better. I feel better. And I hope she's proud of me.
She's so proud of you. And I'm so proud. Like, when you sent me that today, I like jumped off the couch where my ass was firmly planted.
I know. I was really excited. I did not sleep at all. So like going into, and the next couple of weeks finalize the divorce, I am going to go into it so much more relieved, and just knowing that I have a handle on everything, and, you know, learning from my mistakes, which, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, so many,
but you learn and you grew.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess the whole point of this episode, really, we talked about a lot of stuff. The whole point of this episode is that you grow, and you just become a different version of a parent that hopefully you want to be, and in turn your kids grow, and you just keep evolving, you know. I mean, that's the hope, you know, but sometimes there's things that you can't stop for your kids. You know, if your kid, you know, struggling with drugs or alcohol, no matter how much you love them, no matter what life you gave them, sometimes you just can't, you can't stop, you know, and I can't imagine like how some parents feel when that happens to their kid. Cause I mean, I know mom guilt. I know the guilt is, man, it is a dark fucking stain on your soul.
Can I tell you this? My mom went through this shit unmedicated.
I don't know how.
I don't know either. Like, I do not know. I will never understand that. At all.
Yeah. And I had never needed to be in medicated. I've always had coping skills, always. And I've never really struggled that hard with anxiety. I did try to somewhat, I don't know, slit my wrist when I was a teenager. But that was just because of the abuse, and I just needed something. But yeah, but man, the anxiety was too much for me to handle this time around. It was too much. It was too much.
I mean, I feel you. I remember feeling like my head was disconnected from my body.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. I felt like I was not with myself. It was the weirdest thing I have ever experienced. Never again. Never again. Nope.
Yeah, but that's what I was also going to address, is that you said you wish that you wouldn't have waited 2 years after Everly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But part of anxiety is your anxiety to start medication. So it's like a cycle.
I just felt like I was getting better. Like, but it was,
but your anxiety was, yes. And your anxiety is telling you that. That's what people don't understand. So I always tell someone, I've always told someone I'm working with when I was in social work, and still to this day with friends, you should name your anxiety. So I always use Chad.
Ew.
Well, yes. Anxiety is a bitch, isn't it? And yeah. So is Chad. So Chad,
and I feel like Chad cannot be a baby. Like there is no baby Chad.
No. So it's like white frat boy, douchey Chad.
Mm-hmm.
And Chad is your anxiety. And Chad just keeps on and he's yelling at you and he's yelling at you and he's yelling at you. Then you think like, oh, I should probably get some medicine for that. And Chad's going like this. You don't fucking need medicine. And whatever your anxiety says, let's say your anxiety says medicine is going to change you. So Chad is like, medicine is going to fuck you up and it's going to change you and blah, blah, blah. And so when you start to think about taking medicine, your anxiety really holds on to that last thread of like, no, you can't kill us. And so it's hard to like make that last leap to like put Chad to bed or hibernation. You feel me?
Yeah. That's my mom. It is so funny. She's like, Chad? Can't. Oh no. My mom can't take a pill. And she's like, oh, she's like, my throat's closing. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not lying. I swear. Like it can be like an antibiotic. And she's like, my throat is tight. What? No, it's not. Oh, so yeah. Crazy. But no, I was like, I can't wait for my appointment. Once I hit that limit, I was done. Nope. I don't have to learn the hard way anymore. I'm done.
That's really freaking funny. That's really freaking funny. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? We can continue this conversation. We'll continue this conversation. I think it's a really important one to have. I think I always say we're going to continue it. Then we ultimately never continue it.
Story of my life.
So yeah, but we're going to try. I think it was, important. So, don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts and review us. That'd be great. We're sponsored by, my forthcoming book, Love for Libra Wild. Dear Mom, an organization that supports mothers with children with Down syndrome, and Ruby's Rainbow raises funds for scholarships to college for adults with Down syndrome. And if you have any submissions, suggestions, questions, advice you need, please leave it at www.loveherleaveherwild.com. Thank you so much. All right. Bye.